probably 20 to 25 projects on the go currently right now in various stages of planning, and it's all happening well.
Are you a real estate investor looking to sharpen your skills, or a newbie looking to become one? You're in the right place. Welcome to Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada with your host, Sarah Larby.
How do you go from police officer to owning 150 plus properties in only 3 years and then becoming a very successful builder and developer? Well, don't go anywhere. Today's guest is Jason Boccanfuso, who did just that. And I will tell you, he's one of the most humble people that I've ever met and is willing to share so much awesome information. Jason was telling me stories about how he bought some land in the way of future developments, and they came knocking on his door, and he was able to negotiate some really cool things, and now is doing many of his own projects. But it is a great story to see how he started with absolutely nothing and built his way in a very short amount of time. So we have a great conversation. We talk about how to build a large portfolio, how to buy land, how to sell parcels of land, and so much more. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Don't forget to leave a rating and review. And also, if you are interested, I know October 6th event was completely sold out very quickly, but if you are interested in the future event, send me an email. We are actually planning a retreat at the resort that I'm building out with my two partners for June of 2022. So it is going to be an awesome real estate and wellness retreat. So if you are interested in that, just send me a message and I will at least add your name so that you can get the information once it is ready to be sent out. Enjoy the podcast and don't forget, leave a rating and review. Thanks very much and see you next week.
Jason, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm excited to have you. Now you've got an amazing background that you are, you know, doing a work vacation. And whereabouts are you right now?
I'm in sunny Southwest Florida. It's pretty hot down here, and hot all year round. So just enjoying things and being able to work from the pool, and it's all good.
Yeah, and I think you. Florida's opened up everything a lot sooner than Ontario, so it probably feels a little bit more normal.
Yeah. Yeah, things are pretty well back to normal. Yeah, so it's good.
Awesome, good. So you've got an amazing story, and you shared it at one of our Right Club meetings in the past. My mind was blown. I think it's just so inspiring, and I was hoping that you could start by sharing a little bit of your background, how you got started in real estate, because I think it's just very inspirational for us all to be able to, you know, listen and for you to share your story on that.
Thanks. Yeah, glad to share. So I started investing when I was 19. I never grew up with any money yet. Just really wanted to, to invest and really get going. And when I was 19 years old, I was a police officer with Durham Regional Police, and pretty young to be a police officer, but it was a good time and had a lot of fun. I was working and I got called into the police sergeant's office by one of my sergeants, and he said, "Hey kid, what are you doing with all your money?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, going to the bar, spending it at university towns, you know, where I should be right now." And he kind of laughed and he said, "Well, how about you invest in why don't you invest your money in real estate?" And I said, "Well, what does that mean?" And he said, "Well, it means you buy a property and you have other people live in it and you benefit from the rent. And of course you pay the mortgage down and, you know, and you fast forward a few years, you have some equity there." And I said, "Well, why would I buy a house for somebody else to live in when I don't even have a house for me to live in? I mean, I'm still living in the basement of my parents' property and, don't have my own house." And he said, "Well, it's called investing." I'm like, "Yeah, okay, sure. Well, I'm in." So it was sort of easy being a police officer, because whenever a superior officer says something, you don't have to think or interpret. You just say yes and you go on. So I kind of got lucky there. And the person I had doing that, it was very successful at investing in real estate and kind of had policing as a side gig. So I started buying up houses. I was fortunate they were doing, you know, no money down mortgages at the time, which is great because I didn't have any money. So it was perfect. And bought a few houses in a row, you know, in the first few months. And then I started buying, when I bought a property, it was great because I would show the property and my tenant's first and last month's rent would cover my closing costs. So it was perfect. I would actually, you know, be able to buy them without any money down. And so I started buying a whole bunch, you know, and I didn't really have anything to fear. I didn't worry about risk. I came from no money. So if the whole world collapsed and I went back to having no money, I still had a good government job. So I was in and I bought a whole bunch. So in the first 3 years, I bought about 150 properties and bought them all over the place. Bought them in university towns, everywhere that my friends went to school. I bought them all a house and they all lived there with their buddies and I'd let them live for free, and then they would charge their friends, you know, the rent that would cover the mortgage. So that was kind of good. That worked out. And then I started getting bored and, you know, thinking, how do I take it to the next level? So I started playing Monopoly, you know, just like the Monopoly guy taught me. I would trade four houses for a building, When I say trade, I mean sell them. And started buying apartment buildings all over the place because it just made more sense to get more doors in a certain area. So I started doing that for a while. And I said, well, this is fun. How can we take it to the next level? And I started buying land and buying land in the way of development. So I had a lot of contacts with the city and you know, various developers and builders I'd met over the years. And I started just copying and following what they did. And I realized that, you know, taking advice from the Monopoly guy at the start and trading four houses for a building, and then taking advice from Wayne Gretzky, funny enough, where they always asked him, you know, hey, Wayne, what's the secret to you being the best hockey player that's ever lived? You know, most people would say he worked harder or he was just born that way. But in the reality is, he said, well, it's very simple. For me, I just go to where the puck is going to be, not to where it is today. So I go and position myself to where it's going to end up. And that's how I'm successful. So I thought, you know, that kind of makes sense. There's some parallels there. So I started buying land in the way of development. So I would find where the land was headed, where the development was headed to. You know, was it where was the increase in population? Where was the city and the region and the province investing in infrastructure? And to some degree, the federal government for airports. Where were they investing in infrastructure? And once I got that figured out, I started buying land in the path. So then what would happen is I would buy land, hold it, and then a couple years later, sometimes even sooner, a big developer would knock on the door and say, hey, listen, I want to buy your land. So I would sell the land often for, you know, five, sometimes even 10 times what I paid for it. So it's kind of a good way to get going there. And then I started realizing, well, if they're willing to pay me all that money for this land, there's got to be something in it for them. So after a first bunch of sales, I started saying, you know, why don't I just take part of it? So what I did was I would sell to the developer. They would take the lead role, but I would take a smaller piece and stay in the deal, you know, and really study them, go to school on them and learn the business. And from there, you know, I've done a number of developments with a lot of major developers in the area. And now, you know, I've gained enough knowledge, skills and abilities that I'm able to do that on my own. So I've set up my own development company, my own finance company, my own sales company, my own property management company, and all of those various factors and construction companies, they all work closely together. And I have vice presidents that run each of those divisions. And they all run as you know, kind of one well-oiled machine. So there's my story. And I'm you know, going to keep going. Why not? Right? Started buying a bunch of stuff in the U.S. I get bored easy. I have like a functional ADD, I guess. So I just want to keep challenging myself.
That is awesome. I mean, really, ultimately, you took the advice from somebody else, didn't have analysis paralysis, decided to go ahead with it. And obviously, back in the day when we could get into property with nothing down, I mean, things have changed since then, but there's lots of people that didn't take the opportunity, you know, you went in and you got it. But I don't think I've talked to somebody else in the podcast prior that went and bought the land before it got developed and used that as a strategy. And I think it's really genius. And it, you know, do you think that specific strategy helped you get to where you are today? If you looked at everything else that you did, was it mostly, you know, buying the land in the way of developers and then getting them to get you into the deal that really propelled you forward? Or do you think it was something else that you did from a strategy's perspective?
Yeah, it was definitely that helped, but you need some fuel in the gas tank first before, you know, you can start doing that. To buy land is very so the strategy of leveraging at high level ratios to land, you can't really do that. So you're going to have a lot of capital in the bank account, availability to capital or access to capital in partners. And be able to park money for quite a long time with a relatively low degree of certainty. You know, here's what I always say. Those that seek certainty will never achieve these kind of results because development by nature is not certain. You know, like GICs are certain, but development's not certain. What do I mean by certain? Well, you can calculate your risk. It's not that you're just guessing and playing blind archery. But what happens is, you know, you can't be definitive on how long it's going to take before it's able to be developed, because you're at the mercy of the city and various other regulatory bodies and market trends and stuff like that. So, you know, it definitely helped. But I'll tell you, the sound strategy of getting involved in really bread and butter type real estate, single family residential, duplexes, pre-construction, those things to start off till you build up a war chest, and then you can afford to park a bunch of money and sort of forget about it for a while. And that's really, once you're able to get to that level, those are the big time hits. You know, there's sometimes, you know, I've done close to 100x return on an investment in the development side. But again, those are long-term plays and you have to park a significant amount of capital there. So that's it. You touched on one thing I thought was really interesting, analysis paralysis. I don't think I've heard that before, but when people often ask, you know, what is the main thing that separates people who have and versus people that don't, it's the ability to take action. I mean, you know, when you sit there and if you, someone that analyzes everything to death, by the time you make a decision, the opportunity is already gone. Those are the most successful. They make a decision after they have about 30% of the information, but never more than 70% of the information. I got that from Colin Powell, the United States Secretary of State. He talks about that all the time, that he never makes it. The top leaders and the most successful people, they have at least 30% of the information, but they make the decision before they have 70% of the information. Because if you wait to gather more than 70%, people like me have already bought the opportunity and you don't have a chance to do it anyway.
And now we're going to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors.
Hey guys, just want to take a quick moment and introduce you to a key member of my power team. Dylan Suter is my realtor who's been working very hard to find me amazing deals. And Dylan, I'm a big proponent in working with realtors that are investors, and Dylan is truly an investor. Welcome, Dylan, and thank you so much for being a sponsor. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I want to first thank you for having us as a sponsor. We're really grateful to be working with you and all of the support you've given us over the past couple of years. So thank you so much for that. And our focus as Elevation Realty is to focus our attention primarily on real estate investors that are looking to replace their active income with a passive income and go enjoy what they like most, such as time with the family or up at the cottage, whatever it may be. So what we do is we focus our attention on creating a plan specific for each client, whether that is something they want to have 5 properties in 5 years and be able to sit on them for 10 years and then sell them and retire on the equity. Or if they're looking to scale their portfolio and retire in the next 12 months, we can look at doing that as well. Through joint ventures or Airbnb short-term rentals. We can talk through buildings, buy, renovate, refinance, single family purchases, and the list goes on.
That's awesome. Now, Dylan, if people wanted to reach out and get help from you, where can they go?
They can check us out online at www.elevationrealty.ca, E-L-E-V-A-T-I-O-N, realty.ca, or they can email us at info@elevationrealty.ca. Give us a call or text at 905-592-4220 or check us out at The Right Club or other meetup groups that we're usually at as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dylan. It is awesome working with you as always. And now back to the show.
And now back to the show.
Yeah, I've never heard that specifically worded that way before, but that's very true. And I think the more you get into whether it's the BRRRR strategy, developments, there's more uncertainty, you know, as you go into different sandboxes, buying development and developing and building. Like, there's definitely less certainty than a buy and hold where you're just putting in tenants, you know, and there definitely needs to be some comfort of the unknown and being okay with not knowing everything all the time. And I do want to go back though to the land piece, because it's not a discussion that we've had, and I think it is interesting. It's not a discussion that we've had on this podcast, but I do have investors at all different levels listening to this. So there's investors that are just starting out, but there's investors that are looking for that next big play or that next opportunity, or to play in a different sandbox because the market is just, you know, a little bit nuts right now. But let's just say land and land development was something that they were interested in. What are some things that you can recommend that they maybe, you know, maybe resources or things that they can learn before they take that leap into buying land and developing?
That's a good question. And it is a great way to invest, you know, if you don't need an immediate short-term gain. Of course, there are land deals you could buy that do have short-term gains if you know the business really well. and you can take advantage of the timing. Some resources, I've actually created one. I mean, there's been such a need out there that I actually wrote the book on it and have a website that I've created that specifically speaks to how to invest in land, what to do, what to avoid. Land sale program. And that's just landsaleprogram.com is a place people can go to. And that just gives you a lot of free resources there that teaches you, exactly what to do, what not to do when investing in land, but also when you're going to sell it. Because of course, you know, buying land is one thing, but you don't realize your profit until you sell it. So being able to set it up and ultimately when you're purchasing land, you're typically buying land from a regular landowner. I just say regular landowner, meaning not a sophisticated developer. They typically don't sell land, they buy it. So when you're purchasing land, there's some tips and tricks to do what to avoid. You know, you don't just simply buy land because you like where it's located or you think it looks good. There's a lot of things to consider. You know, where is the servicing available? You know, is there enough sewage capacity, water capacity? What is the official plan for the province to call for and the official plan for the region and the official plan for the city? You know, you have to be able to read those things and interpret them and know what it's saying, but more importantly, what it's not saying, and using an educated guess on how to get there. So definitely surrounding yourselves with trusted experts that can guide you through that process is going to be critical. You know, trying to go it alone is very tough, but trusting the experts in the area and really having people guide you through that. So landsaleprogram.com and landsaleprogram is a great place to start. And it focuses a lot on the sale piece, because when you're going to sell, you're selling to a developer, and selling to a builder and a developer is much different than just putting a for sale sign on the lot, putting it up for sale. So you want to deal with the trusted specialist that specializes in land sales, that you can maximize not only your return, but also the terms and conditions to make sure that you're not being tied up for years on end without an exit strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And you talked about a team of expert. I mean, obviously we're all about team, right? Your lawyer, your accountants, realtors, et cetera. What are different team members that you need when you get to that, you know, that next level of developing or building, like I'm guessing an engineer, like, you know, like maybe you could just list a few that you need to add onto your team at that point in time.
For sure. Yeah. And having each person do what they do best. So you definitely are going to need a lawyer to complete the transaction. And to help out with some particular clauses that are going to be site-specific, very site-specific clauses, you know, in relation to what it is you're buying. You're going to need a planner. Okay, why is a planner important? Because, see, making a land investment where you make your money is changing the use to a higher and better use. Let me give you an example. If you buy a piece of land that right now is maybe a commercial plaza, it might be a strip plaza, you know, maybe 25,000 square feet or so on 3 acres, you know, and it's a strip plaza that has a value of X. But if you can get the zoning changed through the use of a planner and you can get it changed to high density residential, well, now all of a sudden you can triple and quadruple the value of the land. So you're going to need a planner on staff or on your in your Rolodex so you can go out and speak with them. Because they're going to be the ones that drive the process to change it to a different use. And that's really where your value creation is. A lot of times I engage a planner. We have everybody internally in our company. I would engage our planner even before I do the offer because I would want their opinion. Hey, look, I'm thinking of buying this piece of land. Here's what I'd like to do with it. What do you think from a planning perspective, will this be able to get through the process? Now, planning, when I talk about that, I'm talking about from an actual profession, a planner. You know, who specializes in changing the zoning and going through the site plan approval process. It's not just what's planned in my head or on a whiteboard, but I seek their advice and guidance right there. Accounting is important because, you know, often how you structure the deal determines how much you end up with at the end of the deal. It can help you with risk management. It can help you with also with tax planning advice. And you're going to need a trusted realtor to help you put the whole thing together. If you're taking it right to the finish line, you're going to need to engage with a contractor or a constructor, as well as a sales team that specializes in new home sales along the way to take it to the end. So it's it's more of an arduous process than simply buying a home. However, it's not that difficult if you have the right people around you that do this stuff every day. They all handle their part of the deal, and it comes together nicely. It's a lot more hands-off than managing tenants. So, you know, there's some benefit to that as well.
And now we're going to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors.
Hey guys, I just want to take a quick moment here and pause the podcast to introduce you to one of my favorite contractors, John from Blackjack Contracting Inc. And he has been serving the Niagara, Hamilton, and Brantford areas for the past 3 years and has become the area's legal basement suite renovation specialist. He works with many investors that I know and some newer investors, some more experienced investors, and he converts single family homes into multiple units, as well as my favorite strategy, the BRRRR strategy. So he's well versed in those as well to make sure that we can achieve the maximum value of the property and the maximum ARV. He has also completed over 100 units from Brantford to Niagara Falls and everywhere in between as well. They do everything from permitting to the design to the final cleaning before listing our rentals for rent or for sale. And he's also a fully licensed electrical contractor. He's certified with ESA and he will take jobs of all sizes. So no job is too big. He's done a complete guts really from the ground up. So super impressed with his work and what he's been doing for fellow investors that I know as well. So if you wanted to reach out, his website is blackjackcontractinginc.ca and you can ask him whatever questions you have. You can also reach out to him Instagram, which is at blackjackcontractinginc. And like he says, he knows that investing feels like the biggest gamble of our lives. So when you have Blackjack on your side, the house always wins. I will also add that there is currently a ban as of April 4th on new permits. So he will still actively work to the law's extent and actively work with investors to get projects planned out for when the ban is lifted. So that way you're not necessarily waiting and waiting and waiting. So guys, 100%, I recommend Blackjack Contracting. I will say that finding the right contractor is sometimes a hassle, and getting a good one that works with investors, that understands the numbers, is going to be critical in our success, especially when doing the BRRRR strategy.
And now back to the show.
Absolutely. I guess it lets you enjoy your time out there in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. We're right now, we have, probably 20 to 25 projects on the go currently right now, in various stages of planning, and it's all happening while I'm in Florida right now, but I'm in constant contact with the office.
All right. Awesome.
I guess
awesome.
That brings up a good point. You know, if I'm the person that's tempted to try and do it myself, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The smartest thing I can ever do is operate from a position that I know nothing, and it forces me to seek out the experts around me. I know enough about planning to have a conversation. I could run courses on planning, but my planner knows planning better than I do, so I don't try and get in their way. My architect knows architecture way better than I do, so I don't try and get in their way. I find a lot of people, you know, they often get in their own way instead of seeking the advice and expertise of those around them. So operating as if I have no brain, no arms, and no legs, so I can't physically do anything or get in the way and cause problems.
Awesome. So you've got 25 projects on the go. I'm guessing different sizes, different scales, different locations. Are you able to share maybe from, so there's a lot of background noise. I think kids sound like they're having fun there, but you know, are you able to share maybe one project as an example, like acquisition land, you know, from buying the land and what that looks like from a rough number standpoint, and what your end exit looks like on just, I guess, just pick one that you want to share.
I purchased a piece of property, the east of Toronto, where the 407 ends, near the 115 highway. And I bought the land for $1.3 million and took it through a site plan approval process and have achieved site plan approval. So it's 5.5 acres. I paid $1.3 million for it. And it has, it's right on the main street, in Newcastle, which is just east of Oshawa, right at the sort of the 407, 115, where the 407 ends. And I was able to take it through the process, get it approved for 223 condo units. So it was just an agricultural piece right at the corner. So it took it to the zoning and changed it to high density residential. So added a 223 unit condo building on it. And also have 12 townhouses and 5,172 square feet commercial plaza on the opposite corner with 6 apartments above it and an additional 64 unit apartment building on site. So I was able to create all of those out of the 5.5 acres of raw land. And now the value is well north of $20 million if I were to sell it. Now this one I'm going to take cradle to grave. So I'm going to I'm going to sell units pre-construction, I'm going to build them, and I'm going to retain the apartment in the commercial. But that's an example where you take a $1.3 million investment, and 5.5, 6 years later, if I wanted to pull the trigger and sell it right now, I would easily get 20 million plus on that site.
That is awesome. And just to get a, you know, a bit of a perspective, you know, what, because it's not all profit, right? You'd sell it gross, you know, 20 mil, it's not 20 mil profit. You know, if you're able to maybe share like, you know, something like that, what does it cost to develop? Because there's obviously fees roughly, I don't need exact, but you know, and then what are you projecting the cost to build is going to be, and then maybe your delta, if that's okay on one of them.
Right. So with the, I mean, that one's a variable by a number of factors, but you know, the cost to actually develop the site is just over $2 million. And that will be roads, internal roads, curbs, all of the on-site, this stuff is about $2 million. And the approval process was about $500,000 to take it the distance. So you're into it for about $2.5 million. So to arrive at that $20 million value, you're into it for $2.5 million plus the purchase price of another $1.5 million. So I'm into the deal for, you know, it's $1.3 million for land transfer tax and stuff, legals, you know, you're into it for about $1.5 million. So all in, I'm into the deal for about $4 million to generate the $20 million if I exit it now. Now, if I take it the distance, which I'm going to, so when I sell the condominium units, the cost to construct those, they're fluctuating, you know, any given day of the peak, but it's in and about $250 a square foot to build the building. And then you've got other parking costs of, now I'm fortunate because of the grading parking sort of, it's an underground parking garage, but I don't have to excavate to do it because it slopes from the back to the front. So really when you look at it, it just looks like a big, gigantic walkout basement, the parking garage. So I'm going to save some costs there. I'll be about $20,000 a space versus $40,000 if I had to excavate. And commercial, you know, I can deliver that for about $200 a square foot for the base building. So, you know, when you start running those numbers through, there's an additional 30 or 40 million profit in the project, but of course that's going to take quite a while to finalize that out. But the biggest delta is the purchase of the land, changing the use to higher and better use, taking it through the process, getting it approved, and then going from there, exiting there is your largest return. If you want to get into building, selling and building, of course there's money to be made there as well, but that's a whole different business. And the percentages of returns are lower, but it's still a good project.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like a great one, you know, and there's time, right? So it's not like you could just go in and be like, oh, I'm going to change the zoning of this piece of property, right, and it's going to be done tomorrow. Are you able to share like roughly like timelines, yep, you know, and what that looks like? Because it's not as easy as I think, you know, you make it sound super easy, but it's definitely not that easy.
No, it's certainly not if you're trying to do it on your own. I mean, well, to the point of it being easy, I'll share with you this. It's about 3.5 years to change the zoning, to go through all the process, but it required about 30 hours of my time.
That's not bad. That's like really good because you have a team. Is that because you got a good team in place that essentially does a lot of that back and forth?
Yes, and there's not even, the most of the work is on the city's end. Mm. So, you know, to create a site map, a site plan, and the basic stuff that the city needs in order to consider the application is not all that difficult. I mean, it probably takes my design guys, you know, 40 or 50 hours worth of work to get that done. And most of it is, you know, you do a submission and then it's a couple of months till you hear back on the submission because it has to go through 17 different layers of the municipality, you know, engineering, the fire department, servicing, architectural control. It goes through the, you know, they make sure that it's going to comply with all of the different zoning bylaws. There's, you know, sometimes the historical society weighs in, not in this particular case, but in other cases, if there's a building you have to demolish on site, it goes through the accessibility committee to make sure that the design is, you know, accommodates all people with all different abilities. And, you know, it's sort of a environmental engineering studies and all that stuff. So that stuff takes time, but they're all individual consultants that you have. So on a personal time commitment, even though I'm the one, you know, orchestrating it all, it's not really taking up much of my time.
Yeah, that is amazing. And, you know, one of the things that I guess, because, you know, realistically, you sent some questions and I'm like, do I like these questions? Do I not like these questions? I like your questions that you sent me. And sometimes I ask them, sometimes I don't. But you asked about mistakes, and I want to ask about mistakes, but when it pertains to developing and your process on that, not necessarily getting started. What are some mistakes that you see potentially, you know, newer builders or newer developers, if they're not going to go ahead and build, you know, what are some of those pitfalls?
The biggest mistake is getting in your own way. So huge difference between, you know, look, when you own the project, you're responsible for getting it done, but you're not responsible for doing it. Okay, so big difference between getting it done and doing it yourself. Huge difference. Here's the way I look at it. And I go back to this analogy where I literally operate every minute of the day as if I have no brain. I always assume that I know the least out of anybody I come into contact with. And here's what it forces me to do. It forces me to seek out the experts around me who are much better at it than I am. Okay, because if I try and do the design, it'll probably take me 500 hours and it will be no like a tenth as good as the design of my architect. So, you know, I don't get in my own way. And that's really the biggest mistake I see investors make is they're like, oh, I need to become the expert in building code to design this thing. Well, you better be prepared to go to school for 8 years to get all of the qualifications you need to design the building. Or you can pick up the phone and have a 15-minute conversation with a building design expert. Oh, hey, I need to become, you know, the expert and do all my research on all this accounting stuff. Or I just need to pick up the phone and have a 15-minute conversation with an accountant that specializes in development. So I spent 30 minutes where other people would spend now 16 years researching everything. You know, in those 16 years they spent researching everything, I've done like 70 or 80 projects.
Nice.
Right. So that's really it. So that's the number one mistake, is trying to do things yourself or taking advice and guidance from people who are not the expert. Here's how simple my life is. I just make it simple. Okay. I don't try and complicate things. I'm a simple guy. I just don't get in my own way and I don't try and complicate things. Here's what I mean. Car breaks down, I go to the mechanic. Okay. If my brakes start squeaking, I don't phone my dentist and ask him for his opinion. And I don't go to my auto mechanic if I need a root canal. I just don't do that, right? But for some reason, biggest mistakes I see out there is people seek the advice and guidance of those who are not the subject matter expert. Oh, I was going to invest in land, but my neighbor told me it might not be a good idea. Well, unless your neighbor is the land baron that owns land and has made millions and millions and millions of dollars in land, you can't listen to your neighbor, right? I just call that my staff room syndrome. Anybody's had a job with a staff room before? When you go in the staff room, lovely people, really. I mean, everyone's trying to, you know, do the best for everybody, but there's an expert. It doesn't matter what the topic is. You could talk about boating. There's boats in the background. I'm talking about boating. And all of a sudden, somebody in the staff room is going to be like, oh, I know this about boating and this, and you shouldn't do this. And you shouldn't buy this boat and you should buy this boat. And the first question, I'm like, well, how many boats do you own? Well, I don't. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like your stock advisor saying, hey, I got a great stock tip for you. Why don't you go buy a bunch of these shares? My first question, how many do you have? None. Well, I can't take advice from somebody that's not the subject matter expert. So those are the biggest mistakes I see made all the time. Cost people fortunes. Yeah. You know, they lose their life savings listening to people that aren't the expert.
I mean, especially for real estate, you're right. Like we don't do it for many other things, dentists and car and mechanics and this, but for some reason, when it comes to investing and when it comes to, and maybe boats too, but when it comes to investing, when it comes to real estate, you know, they ask their, you know, I don't know, family member or a neighbor. And you're right. I mean, a lot of people might have heard of bad experiences and they're like, oh, this is what's going to happen. You know, don't do it. So, you know, great tips on that. Like, and you talked a little bit about like, obviously due diligence and by the time that some people do their analysis, you've got a bunch of deals. What is the due diligence that you do if you do see a piece of property to see, like, is this going to be zoned for what I need it to be zoned for? Is there remotely an opportunity? Is it in a flood zone or like a floodplain? And I'm sure there's other things, but what are the due diligence items that you say, okay, I got to do this and then we're good to go?
Yeah, that's a great point. The answer is none at the beginning. Because see, I put the due diligence clause in the agreement. If I'm telling you, I'm in Southwest Florida right now. I'm going to go for a drive later from the resort. I'm going to head to Walgreens and buy a case of water. If I see a piece of land on the drive from here to Walgreens, I'm going to call the sign and I'm going to buy it. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about the area other than it's beautiful and whatever. I'm going to buy it. What I mean by that is I'm going to tie it up under contract immediately without hesitation, it's like fire ready aim. Sometimes we don't even ready aim. We just fire, but here's why. All the time and the research you're going to do into the due diligence happens after you get it under contract. And the reason for that is if you try and do the analysis before, it's gone. And people have bought it already. So look, the basic stuff is this. If you want to go really high level and what's important, you're not just shooting completely blind and buying stuff in the middle of nowhere, just buy stuff in the middle of the traffic. Like the busier, the better. Okay, so a corner with a traffic light, if it's a vacant piece of land, buy it. I don't know. That's about the simplest advice I can get, because I can give you, if it's in a populated area on a corner with a traffic light, it's a gold mine, because you already know that it can accommodate what else is going on in the area. So what's at the major, follow the Vatican or follow the bank. Okay, the Vatican owns every major street corner in every major city in the world. And the ones that they don't own, the bank owns. So there's a reason they buy corners. They're not actually the bank. The reason they buy corners, and the reason that grocery stores like corners, heck, the reason McDonald's likes corners is not to sell hamburgers. It's to control and own the dirt underneath the building, because it's worth a lot more than their business is worth. So that's really the best thing to do. Now, as far as due diligence is concerned after that, a general rule of thumb, whatever is allowed in the area, whatever is already existing in the area, you can do. So if you buy a corner and it's surrounded by a bunch of commercial, you're pretty rest assured you can do a commercial development on that corner. Watch the trends and try and get ahead of it. If you start to see, all areas will build up from the downtown out. So you'll see Toronto will build 70-story towers, and then it swells out like an atomic bomb or a tsunami. You're watching it just kind of spread across. It always spreads from the center out. So what you can do is if you start looking at the density of some sites outside of a downtown core, pick off the ones that are smaller than the buildings around them. Okay, so I just bought a building. I was in Jamaica, bought it sight unseen because somebody sent me hey, here's a good corner. I said, yeah, I looked at it on Google Earth. It's a corner. It's surrounded by a bunch of high-rise buildings. It's not a high-rise. It means it should be. So I bought it and I got a great deal on it. I paid $505,000 for it. And you know, the site rate the next day is already worth $3 million because everything around it's high rise except for this little building. So I don't even have to look at a property like that, because I know I have such a deep knowledge of how the development business works that I know that piece of property is good. And the question the realtor asked me, well, don't you want to inspect it? Don't you want to look at the actual building? I said, no, because even if I got to knock it down, the dirt's worth more than I'm paying for it anyway. So just buy the thing. So that kind of stuff. But taking action is huge. Like, well, I need to analyze it. It's gone. It's like 55 people have bought it already by the time you're finished analyzing. So just go for it immediately.
Get it under contract, get a clause, due diligence clause. And how much time do you give yourself for it? I mean, or maybe not you, because you're probably, you know, a little further ahead than many, but like as a recommended, you know, you say you buy it, you buy it under contract. What's an average due diligence timeline for analyzing raw land once you got it?
Typical in the industry right now is 60-day due diligence, closing 60 days after. But if I'm the buyer, the longer the better, because I'm investing not only in the property and due diligence, but I'm also investing in time. Because, if I can have the thing tied up for 6 months or a year or 2 years on due diligence, well, if I'm paying $2 million for something today, 3 years from now, the one thing they're not making more of in this world is land. So, regardless of market conditions, land bought in the right place is always a very safe investment. So if I can get 2 years due diligence, I might even overpay by $500,000 to buy the time, right? Because then I don't have to close for another couple of years. You know, by then the value has gone up so much more than what I paid for it. So when you're buying, longer the better. There's very specific language to use in due diligence clauses. By the way, just because somebody's a lawyer does not mean that they have a clue on, or a real estate agent does not mean they have a clue on how to do a development agreement. That's also very important, because it's not just a matter of having regular language. You got to have language in there that's very specific to development. And that's why you trust your specialists that do land deals all the time. It's very important.
So a specific lawyer that does land development, and then specific clauses that they would know to include in your offers.
Yeah, exactly.
And how often do you get vendor takebacks on these land deals?
It depends. You know, it's beneficial if you can negotiate good terms, for sure. You know, and the other advice on the vendor take back is that if if you're worried that you might be buying something that they're not really, the seller isn't disclosing everything, like, hey, how come this piece of land's been for sale forever and no one's bought it? That could be a concern. So it's not typical that development land lasts. The best development deals, they don't hit the market, right? People buy them, like people like myself and others buy them before they hit the market because we have a network of people finding deals for us and sending them to us on a regular basis. But if you do happen to have some concerns that way, having them have a vendor take back, in a way, they're sort of in the deal with you a little bit. You know, like if you discover some skeletons in the closet afterwards that they ought to have disclosed, but they didn't, at least you have some money there in a VTP that you can argue for damages, if that's the case. But typically, it is buyer beware. But look, anytime you can get a VTP that's a better rate than the bank, mm-hmm. I always recommend it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Jason, I feel like we could keep talking for hours and hours. You'll have to come back at some point. You've got so much information. We could have taken this in so many different directions. But the next part is our lightning round. So I'm going to ask you a series of five questions. You're going to give me the first answer that comes to mind. Are you ready? This week's lightning round is brought to you by Complete Properties. If you need a great property manager to help you in the Niagara, Hamilton, and Burlington markets, reach out to Margaret Cameron at 905-920-7886. She can also be reached at margaret@completepminc.com via email or the website completepropertiesinc.com. All right. Question number one, what is your favorite real estate investing book?
The Automatic Millionaire by David Bach, B-A-C-H. And yeah.
All right. And the good book. I don't know if you're a podcast listener, but question number two, it doesn't have to be real estate specific, but do you have a favorite podcast?
It could be either Tim Grover has a good one. He's the trainer of Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, or a lot of Grant Cardone stuff I listen to.
All right. Awesome. Question number three, what do you do for fun aside from real estate?
Baseball. Okay. I like baseball. Golf, hang out with the family.
All right. Awesome. Question number four, if you lost everything tomorrow, all your assets, all your money, how would you start again?
Same way I started in the beginning. Not having money is not a barrier to building wealth. You just have to find somebody with money to partner with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And last question, number five, if somebody has $50,000 and they want to get started in real estate, what do you think that they could do to use that money best?
Reconstruction opportunities in a developing marketplace. There's a good opportunity for a good hit there. You could double or triple your money. If not, I would buy a duplex or a single family residential investment. But you might need some help with a down payment if you have some friends or family that can help out with that. If it's just 50 grand, the pre-construction wait a year or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Thanks, Jason. That was great. Where can my listeners reach out and find out more about you if they wanted to connect?
Yeah, they can go to Wealthy Real Estate Investor Program .com. They can go there. Got the House Flip Program .com as well. Any of those websites will link back. But Land Sale Program .com. Any of those sites, landsaleprogram.com, you can reach me there as well. So they all come back to the central hub. We're just a knowledge and information-based organization at this point. We pay it forward, and we like to share our experiences and anything that we've learned over the years, we're happy to share with others.
That's awesome. Jason, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you on. I'm a little jealous of your background there with the water and that I'm seeing, but you know what? Good for you, man. Like that's awesome. And you know, this is why we all do real estate, right? Living the lifestyle. I'll be at my cottage later this week, and that will be my background awesome. In the next couple of days.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for everything you do. You're doing a great job. And, you know, people love the information you're sharing, and you connecting people is really making a difference in people's lives. So keep it up.
Thanks so much. Hey guys, before you go, I wanted to ask you a question. What's stopping you from starting or growing your own real estate investment portfolio? I know for me, before I started, I had plenty of reasons, and at the time they all seemed very valid. But as I started my journey, these reasons slowly fell away. And eventually, only one reason remained. What was actually stopping me was having a proven, actionable, repeatable system. I didn't have that. And the way that was going to change was by investing in myself, learning, listening,
and looking for ways that work, and also, most importantly, discovering what didn't and not making those mistakes again. Fast forward to today, I now have a proven, repeatable series of action steps that has enabled me to build my seven-figure portfolio consisting of multiple homes, and I'm able to manage that in 2 to 3 hours a month. Is that something that you would want? Well, I've actually taken all the knowledge I've accumulated and put that into a comprehensive step-by-step online program. It's called Rise, and it's a program that will help you from where you are now to where you want to be faster and with less of the headaches that I had. So it consists of all the templates and the resources that I use, plus over 40 instructional videos that you get lifetime access to for just a small one-time investment. And, you know, my recommendation is to make the time now to invest in yourself and grow your portfolio to seven figures so that you can bring your retirement dreams closer. If you want some more information about Rise, just go to saralarby.com/RISE to access more details and book your spot.
Thanks so much for listening to Where Should I Invest with your host, Sarah Larby. Make sure to listen in next time. We'll catch you on the next episode of Where Should I Invest?